Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Is a human life defined by our challenges or attempts to conquer them, and do we get to choose? For nearly the past 30 years of his life, Josh Hanegarny's greatest challenge has been Tourette syndrome, a neuropsychiatric disorder that in his case makes itself known constantly in the form of often painful physical tics and uncontrollable urges to vocalize. There are some treatments prescribed, but there is no known cure. But Josh's struggles with Tourette's have not kept him from embarking on a Mormon mission, marrying, becoming a father, and pursuing a career at his favorite place in the world, the sort of secular temple to the printed word that is the Salt Lake City Public Library. Josh Hanegarny shares his story in a new memoir, The World's Strongest Librarian. Josh, welcome to Think.
Thank you so much, Chris. That was a great introduction. You make me sound very interesting.
You are very interesting. Well, I want to start by dispelling what seems to be this persistent media-fueled myth about Tourette's, which is that the defining symptom is a compulsion to shout out obscenities. And in your case, that's not a symptom at all.
No, it's not. That condition is called coprolalia, and it is real. I've met people who have it. What I found out about a year ago is that you can actually have coprolalia without having Tourette's. Hmm. I didn't know that, and I'm sure some people would love to blame their cursing habits on Tourette's if they could. I understand it makes for a great comic bit. You wouldn't get as much comic mileage out of the kind of tics I have. So yeah, it is real, but that stuff is very rare.
Talk about what it feels like. I was really interested to read about the sort of compulsions that you feel and then the way that you have to act on them.
The best way I have heard it described, and I don't think I came up with it, but it is if you imagine that feeling when you need to sneeze at the point where it's right on the brink and you're just going to go crazy if you don't let it out. Mm-hmm. But if your life depended on it, I mean, you could hold in a sneeze. But if you hold it in, you don't get any resolution. You know, the itch doesn't really go away. The urge to have a tic, any particular tic, is kind of like that feeling to have a sneeze, except when you let it out, you don't know what it's going to look like or sound like necessarily. Mm. And the urge, if it goes away, might just go away for a couple of seconds and then build up immediately. So if you can imagine that every cell in your body might need to sneeze, It's kind of, they call it the psychogenic itch. That's always in there. I mean, at its most simple, the least you need to know about it is it makes people move involuntarily or vocalize involuntarily. But that can look and sound like a lot of different things.
I thought it was noteworthy that you actually opened this book with a scene from the library where you work because, yes, you have Tourette syndrome, but you are also defined by your love of literature, by your relationships, your family, your spirituality, even your height. You're 6'7". Was it a deliberate choice not to open the book with a scene that focuses on disability?
You know, that's a good question. I do not know. It took 4 years of pecking around at the book. It may very well be that there originally was a scene like that. I just couldn't say.
Mm-hmm. So you started to show signs of Tourette syndrome when you were in first grade, before you were even really aware of them. And your parents seem to have handled it remarkably well.
I think that is absolutely true. I was in first grade when I started, according to my parents, having the first tics they saw. I was on stage at a first grade Thanksgiving play, and when the lights came up, I started blinking a lot, apparently, and really doing some facial contortions. And they asked me if I knew it was happening, and apparently I didn't. And so they watched me for a couple of weeks, and it really didn't seem to be on my mind much. Mm-hmm. This is something I give them a lot of credit for. They didn't want it to be on my mind, even though they didn't know what it was yet.
Yeah.
It didn't become an issue until later when I was a freshman, where I would bring it to them and say, I think I need to find out what's going on.
Yeah. And so your mom nurtured your love of reading, and your father nurtured your sense of humor. And it seems like those things both played into your approach to dealing with stress.
I think so. I remember a conversation with my dad very early on where he said, "People like us, men like us, once you realize you're never going to be devastatingly handsome, you've got to keep in mind that the funny guy's always got a chance." Mm-hmm. So I think that was probably part of it. But my family was always very humorous. It's kind of weird when I think about it now, but I think we largely communicate through jokes. I also think, you know, like people like Mark Twain and Kurt Vonnegut, they spoke often in different ways about humor being, you know, a self-defense. You laugh because the alternative is too frightening.
And throughout the book, you really, it sounds like you are a voracious reader, but you kind of read anything and everything, anyone and everyone, even though you have your favorites.
You know, I will try just about anything. I definitely have my preferences. One of the great things about being a librarian is that professionally, I kind of get to be a fan of every author and every book, because all I want is for people, I mean, essentially, good books are the books that are good to you, and you shouldn't listen to anybody else if you're not having to write an English paper about it. But yeah, absolutely, I will try just about anything.
Yeah, I had to laugh when you admitted to reading Flowers in the Attic, which is not something that your average librarian probably would cop to.
You know, I don't know. You meet all sorts at the library. Mm-hmm. I met a woman once who told me she was reading Twilight. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, anything else? And she said, no, it's all I read. And I said, you know what? I'm not sure what that means. Let's talk about something else.
And the library comes to life here, too, as a place that is really a spot that is full of life in ways that people don't imagine. I think people who don't spend a lot of time in libraries think of them as very staid environments. And that is not the work environment that you describe.
You know, not this library, at least. But if you came to Salt Lake City, even the five other Salt Lake City locations, they're not like the building I work in.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the flight path of some very interesting people. I think somebody could come up with a brilliant anthropology dissertation on my library. You see just about everything and everyone and every age at any time of day.
Has it been a problem? The vocalizations, are they a problem in terms of like noise in the library?
You know, they can be. I kind of white knuckle it when I'm at work.
It's got to be exhausting.
Yes, it can be. The energy it takes to hold ticks in can actually be more draining than the energy it takes to execute the ticks.
Mm-hmm.
But if you notice, like right now, while we're talking, I'm not having ticks.
Right.
And almost as soon as I stop and I start listening, that's when I'll have ticks because the scales have to balance.
Sure.
I spend a lot of time at work muttering to myself that no one can hear to kind of try to reproduce that same effect of right now when I'm talking. This would probably be a great question for the people I work with in the back room who are way too nice to ever tell me to be quiet. But when I'm out on desk, it's really important to me that I not interfere with anybody's use of the library unless they're using it for something dumb, and then I don't care. But so I don't think it's been a really big deal, although inside it feels different.
There was a time in your young adulthood where the vocalizations were so disturbing to you that you chose to do Botox treatments to your vocal cords, and essentially you had no voice for 3 years.
It was closer to 2 years. It wasn't that the tics were disturbing, although they were. I was screaming so hard every 2 to 3 seconds when I was about 20 that I actually got a hernia just from the pressure of the screaming. Mm-hmm. And I was getting in the shower and looked down, and there was this giant bulge in my abdomen. And I just thought, oh, we've gone well past, you know, just annoying and exhausting. My body's starting to break itself. And so I agreed, yeah, to get these Botox injections in my vocal cords. So it paralyzed the vocal cords. It made it so I couldn't scream. And that kind of made me feel safer in that I didn't think I was going to scream until I got a hernia anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It made it so I could be back out in public. There was a trade-off. That's also when the physical tics started to get worse, because it just kind of moves around.
Yeah.
And
the physical tics now, they're not, or at the time, they're not simply just, you know, facial contortions and blinking. You've actually hit yourself in the face. You've broken teeth. They can be really, really dangerous.
Yeah, you'd laugh if you could see me right now. All 3 days that I've been in New York, my lovely wife has had to get up and apply makeup to my face from where all the places I scratched myself on the airplane coming out. So you just never know. There's a lot of arm waving. I can kind of move the tics around to make it more suitable for the circumstances.
Yeah.
So if I go to a movie theater, I might not yell, but I also dislocated my thumb in a movie theater once, just from the same really strong repetitive motion. And my arms wave around. Right now, the thing is that my neck really cranes around to the end limits of the movement and has to feel a certain tightness. So I've got a lot of rigidity right now that I'm not used to. But, yeah, anything goes. You just never know.
You actually gave your Tourette's a name, which I suppose makes sense because it's one of those things that you have a lifelong, complex relationship with in the same way that you would a relative.
Yeah, I think so. I just remember a moment where my mom, I wanted to stay inside or something, and she said, no, that you can't let this thing make your decisions for you. And it wasn't any real plan. It made it easier to use as a metaphor much later as a writer. But I kind of just had this earworm thing start, like getting a song stuck in your head, where I'd think, Miss Tourette's, which eventually got shortened to Misty. And it made more sense to me as I got older, because a lot of it feels to me like being involved in an abusive partnership with somebody. There's this thing that kind of tries to define who you are and tries to make my decisions for me, tries to hurt me when things are going well, can't bear to see me succeed. And I think part of the reason the imagery works for me is I'm very competitive. And even though, of course, this thing has no idea I'm alive because it's just a bunch of chemicals, sometimes I do better if I feel like I'm actually fighting against something.
Yeah, to have like a definable enemy, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, not only will I win, I'll make someone else lose.
My guest is author Josh Hanagarny. His new memoir is called The World's Strongest Librarian. We'll talk more about his experiences in just a couple of minutes. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. We are working on a challenge grant. We have just an hour to go to receive a total of 70 contributions to get an at-risk challenge from Robert Verdon. This is an additional $1,500 if listeners to Think can make an additional 70 contributions by the end of the show today. If you've ever thought about making a contribution to the show, to the station, now's really the time because this money is very much at risk. Your contribution in any amount will get us closer to making the goal. KERA.org is the website, or 1-888-694-6931. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Thanks again to Robert Verdon, a Dallas attorney. He's a very dedicated supporter of KERA, a very dedicated listener, and he is very generously and I think wisely leveraging this contribution by making it contingent upon your participation, too. You know, Robert, just like Chris and I, Robert wants you to join the station. He wants you to join with him in supporting this resource that you all and we all use. And I think it's a very good reason to join today. Also, what a fantastic conversation with our guest Josh Hanagarny. What a courageous gentleman, and I really want to get back into the next segment and hear the conversation.
Yes, and I got to tell you, I love this book. We do have copies available as a thank
you
gift at the $120 level or above, $10 a month. You know the drill. Fascinating book, really funny. I mean, and it is, you know, it's interesting. We've been talking a lot in this first segment about the Tourette's and his experiences with it, but it really is about his life as a human being, and it's a very complete sort of study and about his family and just a really appealing new voice. This is his first book, and I doubt it will be his last.
We've linked to his website on the Think page for this show, and I was looking at it earlier today, and the book's already in its second printing, so congratulations to Josh on that. He also said this morning that they had just sold the Korean version, and his editor was teasing him that it's probably going to be called Sassy Boy in Korea. But I'm thrilled to have him on the show. It's really just what a courageous guy, and can't wait for the next segment. And I'm sure you can't either, so that's why you should use this moment right now to call us at 888-694-6931 or to click and contribute at kera.org. Chris, 70 more contributions necessary to make our goal.
We really need to get on the stick. Thank you.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering summer courses for adults in literature and languages, cultural history, and arts and design at the Dallas, Plano, and Taos, New Mexico campuses. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with author Josh Hanegarney. His new memoir is called The World's Strongest Librarian, a memoir of Tourette's, faith, strength, and the power of family. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Josh, you grew up in an observant Mormon family, but I was really impressed by your decision to go ahead with your mission, because this is 2 years of sort of knocking on strangers' doors at a time when it was really hard for you to sort of stay in control of your body.
Well, that hadn't really happened yet. You know, the big blow-up moment that I'd never really recover from actually came about 8 months into that mission.
Yeah.
So at the point I was deciding to go, I mean, it had kind of been a tiresome nuisance at that point. But it really wasn't on my mind. I mean, I think for people who liked me, a lot of the tics were actually endearing, mm-hmm. you know, or eccentric, because it wasn't damaging me yet. But yeah, if you were going to design a situation to be as stressful as possible for someone with bad Tourette's, which was coming, mm-hmm. you might say, go to some other city. Your goal is to meet as many strangers as possible every single day, and try to be super pious and reverent and quiet while you try to get them to ask the big questions or change everything that they know about religion.
Yeah. And it rarely worked, even despite the sort of sincere efforts of you and your colleagues. There were not a lot of success stories.
Now, I was in Washington, D.C., and I was teaching in the Spanish language. So, yeah, it depends on how you define success, you know. Sometimes you'd find people who really seemed sincere and they'd get baptized. Sometimes missionaries would wind up baptizing kids who didn't know what they were doing yet. So by the numbers, no, not like, you know, you'd always hear about Santiago, Chile, where people do nothing but teach and baptize on the same day, every day. So it was grueling work. I'm amazed that I was able to do it back then. I think there's a reason why you go when you're so young.
Yeah.
And it's just because you don't know you're not invincible yet.
So when you had to leave, your supervisor, sounds like, could not have been kinder and said, please don't think for a moment that you didn't fulfill your obligation. You did everything you could. But it had to be hard.
Yeah, absolutely. His name was President Graff. And, you know, when you're a person of faith, you know, and I definitely was at the time, I think in a lot of people who consider themselves Christians, at least, rewards, or you know, the good things that happen to you kind of feel like rewards or things you have earned somehow, mm-hmm. and the bad things can feel like punishments. And I had decided to go, and I was doing this incredibly hard, grueling work every day, although it was satisfying. But it was satisfying because I knew for a fact that for the first time, I was doing the right thing, and I was exactly where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then this insane thing started happening, and I couldn't help but wonder, what have I done wrong, you know? And President Graff really did everything he could to try to put those fears away for me.
How did you learn to cope with the depression of going back home and sort of finding yourself again looking for direction and something to do?
You know, I don't know that I did learn how. The next few years would be really dark, and it was just trying some different things. And I think in a lot of ways, sometimes it just takes as long as it takes. That was when my dad started taking me to the gym, which would play a huge part in things later. But honestly, the next few years passed with me basically trying to go to college, then not being able to or not making myself do it, trying to work at different jobs. Same thing. I would either not be able to do the work, or I'd convince myself it was too hard for me to be out, and I'd go home. And a lot of really frustrating setbacks. And at the time, I had no reason to think it was ever going to get any better. And I don't know if I ever actually suffered from any depression, but for me, depression kind of means low output.
Yeah.
And there was almost zero output at the time.
Your mom, though, stayed optimistic for you and ultimately introduced you to the woman who would become your wife.
Yeah, yeah. She loves to take credit for this. My mom had a pretty terrible track record of recommending girls, and it's not like I asked her to go out and hustle for me. But she came home from church one day and said, "I found the perfect girl for you." And I married Jeanette about 13 weeks later. Hmm. I had also always loved to make fun of people who got married so quickly. And it was never going to be me. But once we knew, I mean, there just didn't seem to be any reason to wait.
And you are still happily married today, we should note for everyone.
Yes, absolutely. We're coming up on 12 years. It was still the smartest decision I have ever made. I'm not sure if it was the smartest decision Jeanette had ever made. But she is now, in a way, getting a chance to cash in on some of her long-suffering.
Well, you both knew, Josh, that you wanted to have children and sort of faced heartbreak when she had a number of miscarriages. Yeah. And you had decided to adopt through the Mormon Church and wanted to do the right thing again and to be as honest as possible, which turned out to be a mistake.
You know, I still am not sure what the mistake was. And this is not a situation where I've got sour grapes. What had happened is we went through the intake process, we did some interviews, and Jeanette and I both talked openly about how hard the Tourette's had been. Mm-hmm. And yet I still, you know, humor is often self-defense for me. So I kept making jokes as well, and I have always wondered, they would eventually reject us as applicants, saying there were some red flags in our application and our interviews. And I remember Jeanette just crying and saying, "Oh, we should have lied. We should have said everything was perfect." And I said, "No, I told them all how much I loved Stephen King during this interview, and I described this incredibly grisly novel, and this horrified intern from BYU, I'm sure, just covered the page with red nose." Ultimately, I have talked with other couples who placed through the same agency who said they had much more individual contact with the agency. Mm-hmm. It may have just been a process breakdown. I mean, honestly, it's a tough thing when you are talking with people who believe they are in direct contact with God, and when they say, "We just feel like we've prayed and we don't feel like we can endorse you as candidates."
It's hard to argue your case in that.
Yeah, it's a great way to end a conversation. And I do believe that they believed that. You know, I do not have any grudges at this point. But that, you know, it's pretty handy to be able to say, "You know what, if you have a problem with this, it's not with us. We're just the messengers." Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's really no way out of that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now, and we'll speak with Lisa in Coppell. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Chris. Love your show.
Thank you.
Josh, really appreciate the show and listening to you today. I look forward to reading your book. My daughter, who is 9, does have Tourette's. She also has OCD and ADHD as well. In addition to medication, take her to a behavioral therapist, which helps both her OCD and her Tourette's. And I just wondered if you've had any experience with behavioral therapy, and if so, if you can talk a little bit about that.
You know, is behavioral therapy what I am hearing referred to as behavioral reversal therapy in terms of Tourette's? Right. Do you know?
Yeah, it's where she will do a contrasting movement with the muscle. So, for instance, if she rolls her eyes, instead of rolling her eyes, she will focus on something for 10 seconds when she feels the tick coming on.
Yes, absolutely. A lot of this I came to intuitively without knowing what it was called, just in the course of some of my own experiments. I can usually, unless I'm having some gigantic multi manifestation tick where it's like 100 moving parts, I can generally find a way to have a tick in a way that's less damaging or at least softer on my body in terms of wear and tear. Or I can scale it towards something more acceptable for the situation. And what I generally do, if you just look at every tick as a movement, every movement has a point A and a point B. And point B is where the stress gets resolved. So what I generally try to work on is there another way? Like pretend that me just raising my hand is the tick, and point B is when my hand is right up in the air. I try to find out, can I get to point B in another way, at a slower tempo? Can I move my arm up in a curve versus shooting it straight up in a way that is harder on the joints? And generally, there is something I can do. And a lot of that is what I have heard about the behavior training. You focus in on the tick, and you try to scale it back towards something else, hopefully all the way back to, you know, normal.
I know that you're tall and thin by nature, and we'll talk about your exercise and the difference that has made in a few minutes, but is it hard for you to keep weight on your body?
I've got shrimpy little legs. No matter what I do, I can't make my legs grow. My upper body's pretty big. So, not really in that. I always think, oh, I'd like to be bigger than I am. And then when I realize all the food I'd actually have to eat to do it, it, like, just the hassle of chewing or drinking at all is mm-hmm. what keeps me where I am. I weigh about 260 right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm about the size of LeBron James, with shrimpy legs. but I'm so big. I mean, my frame could probably hold 300 pounds before my head started looking too small. So I don't think it's hard, but I definitely haven't made it a priority.
My guest is author Josh Hanegarny, and we're talking about his new memoir, The World's Strongest Librarian. We'll come back to the conversation in a couple of minutes and invite you to join it by calling 1-800-933-5372 or sending email to think@kera.org. We are working on a very special challenge grant. We have a goal set for us by Robert Verdon. He's an attorney from Dallas who has said he'll give KERA an additional $1,500 if Think listeners will make what amounts to a total of 100 contributions during the 2 hours of Think Today. All we're concerned about at this point is there are 37 left to go. Please, this is close enough that we can definitely make it and far enough away that if you assume someone else will take care of it, we might miss it. So please take action now by making a contribution in any amount at kera.org or at 1-888-694-6931. And Jeff Whittington, we have thank you gift copies of Josh Hanegarny's book, The World's Strongest Librarian.
We do indeed. When you make a $10 a month contribution or $120 all at once, we will happily send you your very own copy of Josh's new book, The World's Strongest Librarian. It's getting some great reviews, and as I mentioned earlier, according to what I read on his site this morning, it's in its second printing. So
it's remarkable.
Congrats to him. That's fantastic, and it's a great story. And we're thrilled to have him on today. We're hearing from some folks, Chris. So we do have this challenge of our very own from Robert Verdon, a Dallas attorney, who says 100 contributions during Think Today. I'll kick in an extra $1,500 for the station. And as Chris mentioned, 37 left to go by 2 o'clock. I want to thank Becky and Randy Klontz, who made a contribution. And Becky says, enough already. Ready to go back to regular programming.
We are with you, Becky.
thanks also to Kristen Sloan in Fort Worth and Ann Ferguson in Rockwall, Greg Hughes in Fort Worth, Gus Seligman in Denton, Felipe Goldring in Garland, Karen Seligman in Denton, and Brian McDonough in Garland. I wonder if Gus and Karen made individual contributions, if so, or even if not. Thank you so much. Also want to thank Paul Munger in Arlington, Jade Seha in Dallas, and Karen Berry in Garland, and a listener who says, I like to think every day with Chris Boyd.
That's lovely. Thank you all so much for your participation. You can join this esteemed group, and it really doesn't take much time, much effort. It doesn't even take much money if you set up a sustaining membership, which is like a monthly draw. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also do this at kera.org. I think lots of people will be interested in reading Josh Hanegarny's new book. I actually brought this with me over the weekend. I was with some friends, and I can't tell you how many people said, when are you going to be done with that? Can I read that next? And it's really a fascinating book. It's funny. It's warm. It's you really are. I like the ability to sort of have a perspective on an experience that I haven't had, and the book is really an interesting interesting journey, not just into Josh's struggles with Tourette syndrome, but also just into his life as a young father, as a librarian. There's some really interesting stuff there. Really great memoir if you were interested in memoirs, and we do have it available as a thank you gift. Lots of you don't take a thank you gift, and you just buy whatever you want and then just make your whole contribution go to KERA. But however you choose to do it is fine with us. We put those there in case you really, if you want to receive a package in the mail, I know the excitement of that.
Yeah.
We've got those for you.
And of course, take advantage of the thank you gift if you want. Many of you that we hear from you all the time, you write in, you say, you know, a lot of my reading list is informed by what I hear on Think. And of course, we think Josh's story is worthwhile and that you as a listener to the station, to this show, would enjoy reading about it. So by all means, if you want to go get the book, it's out, it's available, and you maybe want to make your contribution and put all of your contribution toward programming. Because as Chris has mentioned, we acquire the books. Like when we send you a thank you gift, we had to buy that book to send it to you. So we're sort of doing the shopping for you in a way. But you can make your contribution all go toward programming. And actually, the majority of listeners who contribute do just that.
1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. Looking for an additional 37 contributions this hour. I think the number may have fallen a bit from there, but we are still tabulating in the control room of Pledge. We are close enough to this that we can get there, but we really do need you to take action. If you're assuming that enough other people will do it, please don't. Please be the one who takes action. Most people who join KERA, you know, we don't sort of hold your feet to the fire. Most people join again and again and again. So if you've never tried it, I think that's a nice testament to the sense that you will feel like it was worthwhile, like you got your money's worth. You've been getting your money's worth all this time on this radio station.
Yeah, we've made good progress. We still have a ways to go. 21 minutes, 37 contributions left to go. Chris, I still don't think we're in ChalCon 2 or 1 yet. We're still in the ChalCon 4 or 5. And by the way, you were correct last week. The DEFCON scale does go, the larger the number means the less danger.
The less dangerous
right.
It is. Right? DEFCON 1 or ChalCon 1 would be the most
ChalCon
the most
1 is where we'll be during the next break if we don't hear from a few of you right now at 888-694-6931. And I will tell you this, the smartest audience in radio corrected me during anything you ever wanted to know
awesome.
On Friday. So you were absolutely right.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number to make a contribution, make a gift in any amount right now and help us make this challenge. You can also do it online at kera.org where we have a variety of thank you gifts available for the choosing at a variety of different contribution levels, including copies of The World's Strongest Librarian, a memoir of Tourette's, Faith, Strength, and the Power of Family by our guest this hour, Josh Hanegarney. Choose that thank you gift or another. Choose no thank you gift at all, but please do take action in support of your public radio station, kera.org or 888-694-6931.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, offering summer courses for adults in literature and languages, cultural history, and arts and design at the Dallas, Plano, and Taos, New Mexico campuses. Registration at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Josh Hanegarney, author of the new memoir, The World's Strongest Librarian. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Josh, can you tell us about your friend Adam and the role that he came to play in your life?
I can try. If any of you have ever watched the TV show 24, where Kiefer Sutherland plays the counter-terrorist agent, you know, super agent Jack Bauer, I have described Adam as a mix between Jack Bauer and Temple Grandin. When I met Adam, he was an Air Force tech sergeant, and he was stationed in Minot, North Dakota. And this was about the time I had finally started working at the library, and I was really proud of my new mental toughness, and I was going to do it. I had a career finally, and things were going well. The strength stuff was still what was kind of holding everything together. And for me, making better progress with my strength training means I feel like I have more control. Better results equals better life. And so I was trying to learn from everybody I could possibly find. And online, when you start looking for strength stuff, you start running into the same people over and over.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite was this really gruff character named Unbreakable Adam T. Glass. And Adam was doing something that he referred to as old-time strongman. So if you think of the guys back in the vaudeville days on the circus flyers with the leopard skin who were bending stuff and lifting those circus dumbbells and, like, see the world's strongest neck, that kind of stuff, there were this group of guys out there still doing this, and Adam was one of them. So we got kind of friendly online, as friendly as Adam can get, and before I could chicken out, I asked him if I could train with him for a week up at his house in Minot. And he said, sure. So I took a week of vacation, so did he, and I went up there and we spent a week training. Now, what I didn't know, Adam would later tell me he was autistic. He's obviously very high-functioning. I do not know where on the spectrum he is.
Mm-hmm.
I only know what I've been told by him. But it would explain a lot of things about him, because when Adam picked me up at the airport in Bismarck, he didn't even say hi. I got in the car, and like 5 minutes went by, and he hadn't even said a word to me. And I knew he was going to turn down some road and murder me. And I'd made this terrible mistake. But then he finally said, tell me about your Tourette's. And Adam is this giant guy. He's covered in tattoos. He just looks so intense. And he was in charge of a prison in Iraq at Camp Buka. So he has become as hard of a man as he's needed to be. He says, tell me about your Tourette's. And so I started telling him, and he said, let me guess, you're just trying to manage it. Don't your doctors know that you and me are going to reverse it? Like, we'll fix it. And I just kind of laughed and thought, yeah, whatever. And the more we talked that week, Adam definitely cannot be done justice. But he had gotten a brain injury in a riot in Iraq. And at that point, he started being able to see certain things. He can look at the way a person moves and walks and tell exactly where their body hurts. And he can often recommend a corresponding movement that will fix the pain unless you're actually damaged. And Adam would just look at everything as a movement. It didn't matter whether it was bench pressing a weight or playing a scale on the piano or having a tick. So he just said, all these movements you're having, they're just unskilled movements. We just need to find a way to make them more skilled. So Adam started getting me into some of the strongman stuff, and he actually gave me some ideas for some experiments I might try on my own with the Tourette's. And that was September of 2009. In December, 2 months later, for the first time in like 3 decades, I was able to sit still all on my own for 60 seconds. And it sounds like such a small thing, but it was bigger than anything that ever happened to me. And eventually I was able to turn that minute into 2 and then into 5, and then I'd gone an hour without tics. And it got to the point where I had actually gone for the better part of a year with no tics really to speak of comparatively.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually thought I'd cured myself. We were doing something really cutting edge, and I had started trying to figure out, okay, what exactly has happened and how am I going to replicate it? And then around that time, all of these new, terrible, unanticipated events and stresses poured into my life, and some good ones, like the book deal.
Yeah.
My brain just doesn't know the difference between good stress and bad stress.
Mm-hmm.
And everything revved back up so hard that I've never come back down. And today, at 35, I'm far worse with the Tourette's than I was during the worst of it.
Hmm.
But what I got out of Adam, and continue to get through our friendship, is during that downtime, I still remember what that felt like. And so now when things are bad, it doesn't feel like I just have to wait it out and when will this pass? I feel like I can say, what am I not seeing? What am I not asking? What else could I try? I didn't have that before.
How has fatherhood changed your relationship to Misty and to your own body and the ways that it does serve you and the ways that it sometimes fails you?
Well, I think any parent whose child has difficulties can find a way to blame themselves for it. With me, when I started seeing my son when he was 2.5 start to have what I thought were tics,
mm-hmm.
I just freaked out. Even though I was in this glorious period where I thought I was so smart and had cured myself, I immediately thought, yeah, but for him, he'll be the worst case scenario. And I just felt this horrible shame and guilt. You know, our children are made of us.
Yeah.
And I had given this perfect little boy this genetic deformation. I'm happy to say that in the last 2 years, I haven't seen anything that even remotely looks like a tick in Max, so hopefully that'll be the case and he was just mimicking me or something. It's been very interesting for me to try to figure out how hard I should try to hide it from him, because I can pick up ticks from anything. I spoke in at Gettysburg a year ago at a camp for kids with Tourette's, and you could watch the ticks jump from kid to kid.
Wow.
And from me and to them. And all the parents said yes every time we leave with new ticks. And then after a couple of days, it's back to business as usual. So as I've worsened and my son can't ignore it, now the thing is, okay, if he doesn't actually have it, I'm gonna give it to him because he's always seeing it. I'm gonna be his trigger. So when you talk about trying to protect your son, I'm irrationally or rationally always trying to mask my symptoms from him, and it's just gotten too hard. He's still only five. So there are probably some discussions coming about this very soon.
You're no longer conventionally religious. Is there a part of you that sort of prays about this still?
You know, probably. It's not directed anywhere in particular. But yeah, I feel like I spend a lot of time just hoping really hard.
What does it take to write a memoir? I mean, you're very kind to the people you care about. I think honest, but there's nothing unkind. But I wonder if your wife, if your parents were reluctant at all for you to tell this story that shows you so vulnerable at so many points in your life.
Not really. Everybody's been very supportive. I didn't pay any attention to what anyone might think or feel during the first draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I had made the giant mess of a rough draft, I started talking to my wife and my mom and my dad and saying, okay, here's what I'm thinking. Is this okay? Is this accurate? Is this how you remember it? And nobody really ever pushed back in any way, although my mom, in a magnificent bit of nonsense, has been telling everybody I made her out to be way nicer than she is. So for anybody listening, every time, my mom is really the hero of the story, but anytime you read about her doing something kind for someone, feel free to substitute her doing something incredibly cruel to live up to whatever image she has of herself.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.
Indeed.
Yeah, it really is. It's kind of a beautiful, the whole story, is kind of a nice affirmation of the importance of family. There's so many memoirs that just, tell these horrific stories, and it's lovely to read one with such wonderful people in it.
You know, dysfunction is pretty hot. It's easy to sell.
The new memoir by author Josh Hanegarny is called The World's Strongest Librarian, a memoir of Tourette's, faith, strength, and the power of family. Josh, it's been such a pleasure both reading the book and also speaking with you. Thank you so much for making time for us.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure. And what I would say to anybody who's listening who has Tourette's or your child has Tourette's, if you ever think I can do anything to help, even if it's just comparing notes, I really expect you to write to me. I will be sad if you don't. If I can't help, I won't pretend I can, but sometimes it just helps to have somebody else who gets it. So please.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks to all of you today who are listening to the show. We really appreciate your participation as a listener to Think. We appreciate the input you give us, the feedback. We really appreciate those of you who make contributions. We are so close to earning this challenge grant that was set up for us by Dallas attorney Robert Verdon, who said he would love to give KERA an additional $1,500, but this is attached to 100 contributions today by the listeners to Think. That means in these 2 hours of Think Today. We've got about 7 minutes to make it happen. You can get us there by calling 1-888-694-6931 or make a contribution online at kera.org. You can do an additional gift in any amount. You can do a gift in any amount, or you can make a regular, donation as a membership donation. We are looking for 22 contributions still. We're close, but I would love to just see this counting down, and you can help us make this happen.
888 888- 1-800-694-6931, on the web at kera.org. As Chris mentioned, we do have this challenge grant from Robert Verdon. We must hear from 22 more of you in order to unlock this $1,500 contribution from Robert. He's a Dallas attorney. He's a supporter of the station. He's a listener. He's a member. And he wants you to join him. We want you to join him. We'd like for you to all join right now by calling 888-694-6931.
Down to 21 contributions left to go. I'd love to see these numbers just counting down and down and down. There is plenty of time to process your call. Or your online contribution. KERA.org is the website address to go to, or you can call in to 1-888-694-6931. If you're interested in helping KERA and you would like to receive a thank you gift copy of Josh Hanegarny's book, The World's Strongest Librarian, we would love to send that to you with our compliments. It's available as a thank you gift at the $10 a month membership level.
888-694-6931. The $10 a month membership level works out to $120 all at once. You can check that out on the web at kera.org. It's very easy for many of you to do. As a matter of fact, that $10 a month, $120 annual contribution is about the average gift from people like yourself who've decided to make the move to KERA. You can set up, if you're deciding to make your contribution, you can set up that monthly sustaining membership for as little as $5 a month. So it really is as affordable as you want it to be. And we know that for the vast majority of you, that's something that works. And the $10 a month contribution is easy enough to swing. Please make the call right now, 888-694-6931. Still need 20 contributions in any amount in order to unlock this challenge from Robert Verdon, who has said, you know what? I'll give you guys an extra $1,500 if we get 100 contributions in any amount during the show today.
Just have those numbers roll over again. Now we're down to 19 contributions left to go before Think ends today, and we will receive an extra $1,500. So if you give like $120 or, you know, $50 or $60, you can think of yourself as having empowered the station to receive your contribution plus this additional $1,500. That's a really great thing to be able to know about your contribution. It really does matter, and we're locked into this. These are at-risk grants. People don't go, it's okay, you can have the money. The way that we set these up is very honest and straightforward. We don't receive the $1,500 if we don't receive 100 contributions during Think Today. So please consider calling in now to 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org. We are dependent on listener funding to provide this service to you.
You know what this is?
It's paper ripping.
Well, Robert's cut the check. He's standing there with it. But if we don't make the goal, this is
a little radio theater here.
This is what's going to happen right there.
He will rip the check up. Well, let's not have that happen. 1-888-694-6931 or kera.org.
You know, Michelle Vicente in Dallas is helping us to not have that happen. Rosamond Becker in Fort Worth and also Robert Jones in Dallas, they have made their contribution. They're the reason that not only that we just have 19 more contributions to go to avoid the horrible check tearing up scene.
Down to 18 now.
18 contributions, but they're also making this station possible for all of you to listen every single day. So join them right now, please. Call 888-694-6931 or click and join at kera.org.
All of you who want this to end sooner, you know, if we get the challenge money from Robert Verdon, that takes us $1,500 closer to our goal. This particular challenge goes right into our overall goal. So your contribution right now will get us closer to the moment that we finish, and it'll get you a lot closer than even your own individual contribution. Okay, we're at 16 left to go at kera.org or 1-888-694-6931. We've got ample phone lines and ample, you know, I guess, server space to process multiple contributions at one time. We have 15 now left to go.
888-694-6931. Andy Ibarra, our producer this hour, is literally looking at the screen down there, and he's counting down as they come across the screen. So really, the minute you make your contribution online at kera.org or get on the phone at 888-694-6931. And we got about a minute and a half left to go here. The minute you make that call, he's going to see that and you'll be counted in this challenge. Again, $1,500 at risk. We need to hear from 14 more of you with a contribution at any amount. If you've already given, give an extra $5 or $10 or $15 or $20 to the station. That counts in this challenge period. Robert Verdon, who's a Dallas attorney, has said, I'll give KERA an additional $1,500, but we've got to have 100 contributions during Think Today, and we're still looking for, let's see, it's a 10 more.
All right. Now, there is time for you to get in under the wire. If you call in the next 60 seconds, 1-888-694. I thought Shelley was playing a countdown for us or something there. 1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go to KERA.org, and it will count if you have, you know, begun this transaction. We've got nine now. Nine left to go. Please get on the phone line at 1-888-694-6931 or online at KERA.org.
Initiate the support sequence, and you'll be counted.
That's right.
My friend.
Are we at ChalCon 1?
We are
ChalCon
9.
Definitely
at ChalCon 1 right now. So make the call.
1-888-694-6931. Possibly choose a copy of Josh Hanagarny's book. You can also go online and make your contribution at KERA.org. Looking for nine contributions in order to receive an additional $1,500 for the programming on KERA that you expect to be there every day. Thank you so much for your support.